Hi, it's Tony Nash. I'm the CEO of Booktopia. Welcome to Plugged and Unplanned, a business series where I talk to authors and people from all walks of life about business and the world that we live in today. There's no planning that goes into these sessions. It's just let's get talking and see where we go. This week, I've got Steve Sammartino. He's a futurist, thinker, entrepreneur, and he's done so many things. And I look forward to having a chat with him to talk about his book and about all the things he's accomplished. So let's get stuck into it. So I've got Steve Sammartino with me, author, speaker, entrepreneur. What else do you add to your string of skills?
You know, some people call me a futurist, which is interesting, right? Mm. Because that's one of those ones that's a bit cringeworthy to get called, right? Because people say, oh, I'm a futurist. But my rule is that so long as other people call you that first, then it's okay. Mm. And so being so interested in entrepreneurship, technology, you know, going back to coding when I was 11 years old, to studying economics and doing business, those things really mash up together. And I just kept on getting invited to give opinions on new technology and where we're heading, you know, socially and economically. And then it just kind of, people just started calling me that.
Because if I was going to be a futurist, and I like to call myself, I self-call myself a futurist, because I do like to think further out, is that if I was going to be a futurist, and I'd go for 100 years to like 1,000 years. That way, you know, hey, sue me. You know,
it's like, perfect, isn't
got
it?
Got it wrong.
Got it wrong.
You know, yeah. Nostradamus got it all now, didn't he? I mean,
that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is interesting. Well, I try and be within sort of 1 to 3 years, you know, and 5 years and under, because what I'm trying to do is look at two things. The things that don't change, and that's human behavior. Mm-hmm. So I often say that humans, we have a 200,000-year-old piece of software, our gray matter, the human DNA. The last time we had a fork in our species became Homo sapiens, 200,000 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we haven't had an upgrade. And so our behavior doesn't change much at all. But the way in which we get things done with new technology, like what we've just seen here out in the back end of the establishment, is amazing, right? It's amazing way that we do things. That does change. And so the art of the future is looking at the possibility of new technology and then the unchanging needs of humans and putting those two things together. And then that bundle is always the economics, because money is how we trade and exchange. Mm. And so they're those three things that I really... So it's really a combination of anthropology, human behaviour, the things that don't change, the things that put a smile on our face and how to get things done. The new tools. And with new tools comes new rules. We put those together. And then how do we make sense of this socially and economically? And that's just... I just bundle those things up. Mm. Whole lot of study and a little bit of common sense.
So when you talk about... only looking 1 year to 3 years out, which is really what any business is doing. They're sitting down every year and they're doing a plan. Okay, we might work off 90 days and 30 days as well.
Yeah.
But we're also looking at 1 year to 3 years out too. So as a futurist, you're not really putting yourself, you know, way into the future. Of course, you probably are looking into the future. But you're getting a sense of where things are heading. So what, you know, when you look at that, and you're either an entrepreneur or you're a CEO or you're even just you're a manager or you've got responsibilities in the direction of your organization. Mm. What do people need to be contemplating or thinking about? Because I come across people who are literally, and even in the publishing industry, just know that they've been doing it for decades, that they can't even see that the paradigm has changed so much they can't even kind of transition from where it was to where it is today to go, all right, we just need to reorganize this. And I also have others. There's one guy I know who's touching on 70, and he's constantly thinking about the digital change and transformation. And I met him the other day and he goes, and I've got a new idea and I'm doing this. So how far do we need to be thinking out there to really make use of what you're seeing?
I'll just pick up on the last thing about your friend as well. I think that often people have this false interpretation that age is the thing that matters on your ability to change. It's all attitude. Mm. And that attitude just becomes ensconced over a period of time. The reason I choose that 1 to 3 years is that it's close enough that people feel like they have to act. And so I need to motivate people who I'm trying to help grow their business. And, you know, this is within the C-suite, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and ASX 300 companies down to startups. I want to make them feel like this is happening now and you have to act. Mm. And then you have on the flip side of that, if you start talking about 10 years, oh, there's plenty of time, Tony, we'll get to that. Yeah, see, that's coming. That'll be cool. That'll be great. And also you get this disbelief. 5 years is a little bit too much. Again, they almost feel like there's a little bit too out there. So I do think about what will happen, but what I love to say is how can you act now on where we'll be in 10 years' time? So let's work on the 1 to 3 year situation that we can act on. And talking about people who get stuck in their situation, what happens is, you know what we end up falling in love with? We end up falling in love with the infrastructure that served us. We fall in love with, in business, the system that made us profitable or successful, or what we did in the past, right? Because it's human nature to come back to the river where you caught fish, right? That's the human nature. You're going to come back to that. This is the river that I've caught the fish in the past, and that's where I'm going to go now. And even if you see the river shrinking and the stream is going another way, humans are creatures of habit, and this is where that anthropology comes in. So I really like to, you know, remind people that. And it was interesting to hear how you're worried about what the customer wants, and then we'll just get the back end right to serve that. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to remember that the business we're in is the problems that we solve, not how we solve them, because how we solve them is in a constant state of flux. Mm.
It's interesting in books as well, because in historically the publishers decided what we wanted to read, you know, what price we'd pay for it, and you know when that was going to be ready. They had control over everything.
Yes.
But with self-publishing, with the ability for consumers to go offshore and buy from online retailers in other parts of the world, that the power had actually shifted from the publisher to the reader. And even a book like, and I'm not saying that I've read it, but 50 Shades of Grey.
Come on, Tony, you've read it. Come on, you can tell us.
There's no one
listening, Tony. You can tell us.
I have not read.
Plenty of them, though.
We've sold thousands and thousands. And that is true. That's what I love about that book. But the truth is, what happened behind there was no one wanted to publish it. A lady actually here in Sydney in Hornsby backed it and published it.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it got some critical mass. There was a bunch of readers, and I can only assume women around the world, who started to say, yeah, that's a great book, because it was an ebook only. And once it hit a certain critical mass, the publisher Random House came in and bought the rights off her and then took it global.
Right.
So according to people that who are more into the literary world, who have read it to understand why was this a phenomenon, poorly edited, poorly written, but hit the sweet spot at the right time. And it's a classic example of where the publisher had no bloody idea. No idea
yeah.
that it was going to be a success. And so the power is shifting in publishing, and therefore there's disruption, there's opportunity. Doesn't mean that you're going to sell a lot of books if you want to self-publish.
Right.
Not at all.
Yep.
I mean, you know what it's like. You've written your own book. It doesn't happen by magic. It actually needs to.
Needs work.
It needs to be. You've got to be out there. You've got to be talking about your book. You've got to create some momentum.
I always like that idea. They say it's best-selling author, not best writing author. Yeah, a lot of people get that one wrong. They say, oh, you've written a book, amazing. Well, you know, the selling it's as hard as the writing it. Maybe harder, right? Because, as you know, so this long-tail economy that you've been speaking of, and I really love when Chris Anderson, who was the founder of Wired magazine, he wrote an article called The Long Tail, which is all about, you know, this idea that we used to be restricted by production facilities and shelf space, right? How many books can you fit on a shelf in a store? How many CDs can go in a music store? Well, there is no shelf anymore, right? And also production, how would you even find someone who could make something for you? Well, you can go onto AliExpress or any of those sites and find anyone who can make anything. That really changes the dynamic, I think, of every industry, Tony, not just books.
Well, books actually now has 31 million active SKUs, active records.
Is it that many?
31. We only put 5 million on our website, so we discount a lot of them because we don't feel that they're at the quality that our customers need. And of the 5 million that we have on our website, 135,000 of those are in stock here ready to ship.
Right, and so you'll cross dock or order it as it comes in, and then does the publisher ship it direct, or does it come to you and then it goes out?
It comes to us because we need to inspect it. We have to actually look at each product because the book is like an egg. It doesn't come with any protective packaging. And how many times have we gone to the supermarket, opened up, and there's one of them.
You've got to check the eggs.
You've got to check the eggs and pick them up, and you look and you go. And a book is the same. So it's it needs to be checked because our reputation is at stake every time.
Yeah, right.
And we can't afford to have someone else ship it to one of our customers and it's good enough for them, but it's not good enough for us.
Well, that's the only thing you sell is your reputation, right? Mm. I mean, all of us, whether we're a company or even people having personal brands now, I mean, that's another thing too. I often joke when I do presentations, I ask people, how many free-to-air TV channels are they? And people still now, like 10 years into this, they say, oh, is it 42? Is it sure? I say, infinite, right? You've got your own media channel. You're the CEO of your own personal media corporation.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone is a CEO of sorts and has the ability to produce, not just consume. And I actually reckon that's the fundamental shift in this revolution we're living through. In the industrial era, you were a cog in a system, but someone else owned the system and owned the factors of production. And you would get paid well if you worked in their system and the industrialist would give you a job. Right, but now what's happened is that those tables are turned. You can actually not just be a consumer, but also a producer, right? And we're all producers now to some capacity, whether it's our own media channel on Instagram or our website, or whether we're making things using the tools available. And that flip is the thing that I think a lot of people are struggling with, and they're still thinking about that idea of where's my job going to come from? Well, for me, I'm like, forget the word job. I love the word revenue. Where's my future revenue going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
Might not be employed, but there are a lot of revenue opportunities out there that have never existed for humanity before, ever.
And through your travels and meeting people and that kind of thinking, is that where you've perhaps challenged the paradigm of someone sitting there in the audience and they've come up to you and they still struggle with it? Is there a certain element that will always not find a way, or do they just need to sit... Do they need to percolate on it? Do they need to be confronted? Do they need to be able to work for that long to have kind of got to the... Are we all capable, what I'm asking, in terms of achieving that kind of... that mindset?
You know, the idea of independence and self-reliance, I absolutely believe it's deeply ingrained inside our chest for every single human. I do not believe anyone with the physical and... normal physical and mental ability does not have... the ability to become self-reliant. I believe everyone has that ability. And in fact, you know what? We look back in history, we all used to do that. Every single one of us was self-employed 200 years ago. There were no employees. People act like jobs are this permanent thing that we always had. That only came around in the Industrial Revolution. Less than 10% of people were employees before that. We were artisans, craftsmen, tradesmen. We made things. We had little shops, bakers. I mean, the clues are in our surnames. You know, that's what we did. And then what happened was we got indoctrinated with the schooling system that we have to rely on someone else. We'll get qualified. We'll get some paperwork. And then, mister, can you please give me a job? Right, and I actually think all it needs is a little bit of retraining, and you know, that's what I wrote the book about. I want to show people the talent and potential they've got, and the gift of these tools the technology revolution has given us to help us reinvent ourselves. You know, so I think that all of us can find that self-reliance, because you know what? That's the way it always was, and I actually think it's going back. So companies won't go away. But we might work for companies as freelancers. I have two or three companies that we work for. Or, you know, 50% of our revenue might come from a startup or a business that we do on the side. And then, you know, I might work for Booktopia for 2 days a week on, you know, who knows what, coding or marketing, and then leverage those skills in one of my own business, and then bring the skills that I learn over there back to you at Booktopia, and then we all grow this new ecosystem. So I believe that all of us can really embrace the opportunity with this.
I believe that too. However... But
there's an adjustment, right? There's an adjustment period. It's not going to be automatic for a lot of people. You have to, you have to unlearn, because you get indoctrinated in the past, right? And that's hard.
Yeah, this is what I'm thinking. It's like, so what mindset do we need to unbundle? Do we need to actually break down? What's the, you know, one or two areas that, you know, someone that might be listening to this conversation and go, yeah, that's, you know, I need to... that's what's stopping me from thinking that way, because I naturally think that way. I've been running my own companies for over 20 years, and I just think about opportunities. When you're an entrepreneur, you
can't stop seeing them, can you?
You make the invisible visible. So it's not like The only area where that making being an entrepreneur I've worked out in the last couple of months about making the invisible visible is losing weight.
because there's a few books out in the warehouse where you can grab a couple of that.
So I actually worked out now, and I've had to reprogram myself, and because I realized that I put on weight so easily, I actually have to make the visible invisible.
That's right.
And so I've been playing around with that and realizing I need to get some freedom around that thinking. And I think just even my own personal experience around losing weight right now, which I've got a particular goal that I want to get to. I've lost about 10 kilos and I've got another probably 15 to go. You have to change your thinking. So what is it that other people that are sitting there going, well, I can't think that way, or I hear what those guys are saying, it makes sense, but what do they have to tap into?
I love what you've said there on the how do you change your thinking to get a new result. And I will say that often people come up and go, I'm inspired, you've helped me see the world different. But I do get people say, I just can't, where do I start? I know, and I want to change, but they suffer from this inertia. You know, there's one, that's my little bottle making a noise there. There's one idea that you want to get new thinking to create new actions. But sometimes the new thinking won't give you a new action. But here's one thing I know for sure. When you do something new, it's impossible not to get new thinking. So actually what you need to do is to act without actually knowing what to do. It sounds counterintuitive. So you need to do something different in an entrepreneurial, get a new action, and that actually helps you change your mind and you get momentum. So I always tell people, how can you do something or learn something new? And the physical act of doing something different changes the behavior pattern. So I always say, how can you become an instant entrepreneur? You know, do one thing that you wouldn't have done. And everyone's got a project in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's just, I want to grow a vegetable garden, or you actually have to physically do something different. And I reckon that's the first part to changing your mind. It's because changing a mind just on itself, it's like ephemeral. It's kind of like this thing that lives in the air, isn't it, right? Like with the losing weight. It's like, you know, you got to do it and it's there. How do I get there? But if you make a physical change in your behavior patterns, then it actually changes your mind without knowing. Because what happens is, it's like when you learn to walk, right? It's a physical thing first and a mental thing second, right? So you walk and you fall over, and then you get feedback loops by doing something and falling over and not getting your balance. Mm. And everything that we learn physically actually creates a new mental pattern in our brain. Like, this is science as to how that works, right? It creates a new pathway. And so to get a new pathway for your life, you need to do something different. You know, and whether it's, you know, doing a project, or you know, selling something, or learning a new skill, or learning to code on, you've got to physically change what you do, and then that's an easier way to change your mind. You can change your mind and then do something physically different, but I reckon reversing it is the best hack.
Yeah, they say that knowledge is indestructible. Like, once you've learned it, I mean, we talk about unlearning certain things. I mean, you even mentioned it before. That what it's doing is actually saying, is that yes, you learned it to do it that way, but we're going to give you a more advanced way of learning.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, we're going to pause it here, because we're coming back in a week's time, which for us is only in a few minutes or a second, as part of our series, what have I called it again? Plugged and Unplanned. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.